just before they called it Dead Man's Curve. "Hello, Quirm!" Buddy struck a chord, and a pose. A faint white glow, like the glitter of cheap sequins, outlined him. "Wah!" The cheering became the familiar wall of sound. "I thought we were going to get killed by people who didn't like us," Glod thought. "Now I think it's possible to be killed by people who love us." He looked around carefully. There were guards around the walls. The captain had been no fool. "I just hope Ashfelt put the horse and cart outside like I asked him." He glanced at Buddy, sparkling in the limelight. "A couple of encores and then down the back stairs and away," Glod thought. The big leather satchel had been chained to Cliff's leg. Anyone snatching it would find themselves towing one ton of drummer. "I don't even know what we're going to play," thought Glod. "I never do, I just blow and there it is." "You can't tell me that's right." Buddy whirled his arm like a discus thrower and a chord sprang away and into the ears of the audience. Glod raised the horn to his lips. The sound that emerged was like burning black velvet in a windowless room. "I'm gonna die. That's part of the music. I'm going to die really soon. I can feel it. Every day it's getting closer." He glanced at Buddy again. The boy was scanning the audience as if he was looking for someone in the screaming throng. They played There's a Great Deal of Shaking Happening. They played Give Me That Music with Roxin. They played Pathway to Paradise. And 100 people in the audience swore to buy a guitar in the morning. They played with heart, and especially with soul. They got out after the 9th encore. The crowd was still stamping its feet for more as they climbed through the privy window and dropped into the alley. Ashfelt emptied a sack into the leather satchel. "Another $700, he said, helping them onto the cart.
"Right, and we get $10 each, said Glod.
"You tell Mr. Dibbler, said Ashfelt, as the horse's hooves clattered towards the gates.
I will.
It doesn't matter, said Buddy. Sometimes you do it for the money, but sometimes you do it for the show.
That'll be the day.
Glod fumbled under the seat. Ashfelt had stashed 2 crates of beer there.
There's the festival tomorrow, lads, rumbled Cliff.
The gate arch passed above them. They could still hear the stamping from here.
After that, we'll have a new contract, said the dwarf, with lots of zeros in it.
We got zeros now, said Cliff.
Yeah, but they ain't got many numbers in front of them, Buddy?
They looked around. Buddy was asleep, the guitar clutched to his chest.
Out like a candle, said Glod.
He turned back again. The road stretched ahead of them, pale in the starlight.
You said you just wanted to work, said Cliff. You said you didn't want to be famous. How'd you like it, having to worry about all that gold and having girls throw their chainmail at you?
I'd just have to put up with it.
I'd like a quarry, said the troll.
Yeah?
Yeah. Heart-shaped.
A dark, stormy night. A coach, horses gone, plunged through the rickety, useless fence and dropped tumbling into the gorge below. It didn't even strike an outcrop of rock before it hit the dried riverbed far below and erupted into fragments. Then the oil from the coach lamps ignited, and there was a second explosion, out of which rolled, because there are certain conventions even in a tragedy, a burning wheel. What was strange to Susan was that she felt nothing. She could think sad thoughts, because in the circumstances they had to be sad. She knew who was in the coach. But it had already happened. There was nothing she could do to stop it, because if she'd stopped it, it wouldn't have happened. And she was here watching it happen. So she hadn't, so it had. She felt the logic of the situation dropping into place like a series of huge leaden slabs. Perhaps there was somewhere where it hadn't happened. Perhaps the coach had skidded the other way. Perhaps there had been a convenient rock. Perhaps it hadn't come this way at all. Perhaps the coachman had remembered about the sudden curve. But those possibilities could only exist if there was this one. This wasn't her knowledge. It flowed in from a mind far, far older. Sometimes the only thing you could do for people was to be there. She rode Binky into the shadows by the cliff road and waited. After a minute or two, there was a clattering of stones, and a horse and rider came up an almost vertical path from the riverbed. Binky's nostrils flared. Parapsychology has no word for the uneasy feeling you have when you're in the presence of yourself, although strictly speaking, humans feel it all the time. Susan watched Death dismount and stand, looking down at the riverbed, leaning on his scythe. She thought, but he could have done something, couldn't he? The figure straightened, but didn't.